The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Get 15% off a set of BrakeBest Select, Select Pro, or Import Direct brake pads and two rotors now at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Friday, August 30th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we are going to be talking about what we're calling Steven Spielberg's Close Encounters. My name is Ben Pearson. I'm an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editor and chief film critic, Chris Evangelista.
Hello.
All right, Chris. So like most living movie watchers, you and I love the films of Steven Spielberg, and you even hosted a great podcast called 21st Century Spielberg, where you talk in detail about the movies that he's made since the year 2000. That show is available wherever you get your podcast. I would highly recommend our listeners check that out if they haven't yet. So Chris, today, we're not actually going to be talking about Steven Spielberg movies. We're going to talk about movies that Spielberg almost made, but for whatever reason, didn't end up following through. And crucially, these movies ended up being made by somebody else. So like, famously, he was developing a movie called Night Skies that was a sci-fi horror film that was going to be a spiritual follow-up to Close Encounters of the Third Kind. That doesn't count in our conversation today because it was never actually made, and therefore we have nothing to judge. So I haven't really seen this concept explored very much elsewhere. And since there aren't any big movies coming out this week and summer is wrapping up and Spielberg is kind of the prototypical summer blockbuster director, I thought it'd be fun for us to go through the list of these known projects more or less chronologically, talk about some of these movies and speculate about maybe whether or not they would have been better if Spielberg directed them, if they made sense as Spielberg films, things like that. Does that sound like a plan to you?
I don't know. I think we should talk about the Dennis Quaid movie Reagan instead.
We will not be talking about Reagan on the show. Maybe Ryan will mention some box office stuff, but yeah, that's not one that I really I plan to dig deep into. So I think there are 25 movies here, and between you and I think we've seen almost all of these. Unfortunately, the first one here is one of the rare entries that we have not seen because it's not streaming anywhere, and there's not even some grainy, crappy version available on YouTube. It is called Ace Eli and Roger of the Skies, and it's from 1973. Have you ever even heard of this movie?
I've heard about this just because I can't remember what book it was, but I was reading some book about Spielberg, and this was like vaguely mentioned as something he was considering making, but there wasn't anything else about the movie. It was just like listed a list of projects, and this was one of them.
Yeah, so from what I can tell, it's about a barnstorming pilot and his son as they fly around the United States in the 1920s, having adventures along the way. And Spielberg wrote the story for this, and it's his first feature credit. And he wanted to direct it himself, but Richard D. Zanuck, who was the head of 20th Century Fox at the time, hired somebody named John Erman to direct instead because he thought Spielberg, who I think was in his mid-20s at the time, was too young to handle it. And apparently the final product is not very good. A bunch of people evidently took their names off the movie, and Spielberg later said they should, his quote was, they should bury it, which I guess they did a pretty good job of doing, at least for modern audiences, since we can't really seem to find it. So I don't think we have much more to add on this one, because it's kind of like the one that got away for us. But I guess one of the next ones that I wanted to mention, I'm trying to go in quasi-chronological order here. 1973, a movie called White Lightning came out, and it's a Burt Reynolds action movie that I talked about not too long ago on the podcast. Very Southern revenge film, and it came out a couple of years post-Duel. And I guess it could have been an interesting way for Spielberg to take one of those intermediate steps up in his career. You know, like we talk about that a lot. Sometimes indie directors will just jump straight into blockbusters, and we kind of wistfully think about the days when people had more of a ladder to climb and they could gain skills along the way. I don't know. At the end of the day, though, I can't really imagine this being part of Spielberg's filmography. Have you seen this one?
No, I have not. I'm sorry to say.
Yeah, I found this quote from Spielberg. He said, I spent 2.5 months on the film, met Bert once, found most of the locations, and began to cast the movie until I realized it wasn't something that I wanted to do for a first film. I didn't want to start my career as a hard hat journeyman director. I wanted to do something that was a little bit more personal. And then he went on to make The Sugarland Express instead. So I guess that was probably a good call. I actually have not seen The Sugarland Express. Have you seen that one, Chris?
Yeah, I have. I have not watched it in a long time. I saw it when I was a kid, when I was like going through all of his movies. So I really should revisit that because it's his first. Well, I mean, you know, he made Duel, but like it's his first like feature. Like,
yeah, proper feature.
Yeah.
Okay, so the next one here is from 1974. It's called California Split. Robert Altman directed this. I think you've seen this one, right? What do you remember?
No, I haven't seen this.
Oh, you haven't? Okay.
I'm showing my ass here, but I have not seen it. I'm sad to say I've not. I did see the Ryan Reynolds, Ben Mendelsohn movie, which is basically like a remake of this, which is called, what is that?
Oh, Mississippi Grind?
Yeah, it feels like that's like a loose remake of this because it's about two gamblers and they're hanging out and something like that.
Yeah, that's very much what the case is with California Splits. Two gamblers played by Elliot Gould and George Segal. Or Siegel, and one of them is sort of like pulled into this low life gambling lifestyle by the other one. And again, this is kind of tough for me. It's a little bit of a nasty movie. It's kind of like it gets at like some harsh realities of addiction and stuff like that. It just doesn't really seem like something that I would associate with Spielberg, especially at that time, like pre-Jaws. But yeah,
there's not anyway. Without having seen this, like, there's not a single Robert Altman movie, maybe Popeye, that I can imagine Steven Spielberg directing. Like, Popeye is the only one I can imagine Steven Spielberg directing.
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah. Okay, so this next one I have not seen, and it's called Cruising, and it's a William Friedkin movie starring Al Pacino, and I think it's from 1980. So you've seen Cruising. Tell me about this.
Yeah, Cruising is great. Cruising was very controversial at the time, and I guess it still is controversial now. It's Al Pacino plays a cop who goes undercover to find a serial killer who's preying on gay men. And to go undercover, he goes to a lot of like gay clubs and starts posing as a gay man. And this was pretty, there were a lot of protests against the movie. You know, the gay community was very upset about, you know, a movie about a gay serial killer. You know, it's just like, you know, it got a lot of protests and, Friedkin filmed in like real gay clubs, and he filmed like what was at the time like hardcore content. A lot of it didn't make it into the final movie, but he like deliberately filmed it anyway because William Friedkin did whatever the hell he wanted. But yeah, this is a really good movie, especially if you watch it now in like, you know, removed from the era as this like time capsule of, you know, when it was made, and you know, Pacino is really good in it, and I really dig this movie. It's not, you know, it's not without its controversy, but it's definitely a fascinating 1980s, you know, thriller.
So what do you think about the idea of Spielberg directing this? Because this would have been around the time of 1941, maybe into Raiders. I mean, it came out in 1980 and 1941 came out in 79. Raiders came out in 81. So like conceivably, he could have maybe fit this in between those two movies. What would you think about this? Is it kind of like feel like there was even a chance that this could be a Spielberg movie? Or
I mean, not in the form it exists. It's so like gritty and raw, and you know, I love Steven Spielberg. Steven Spielberg does not really make gritty movies, you know. It's just definitely not movies like this. So I mean, it's just, I can't imagine, like, if Spielberg had made it, it would have been like a completely different movie than what it is, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it would have been fascinating to see him work with Pacino at that point in his career too, though. Like, he's always been great at casting and working with like these gigantic movie stars and stuff like that, and really like being able to pull terrific performances out of them. So I wonder like how different the Al Pacino performance might have been under Spielberg than it was under Friedkin, if that working relationship would have been super different, because Friedkin's like obviously has a very different style than Spielberg. So yeah, just a fascinating what if there. So the next thing is a movie from 1976 called The Bingo Long Traveling All-Stars and Motor Kings. And I had never heard of this, but I watched it for the first time to prepare for this episode. It was directed by a guy named John Badham, who did Blue Thunder and War Games and Short Circuit and Bird on a Wire and a bunch of other stuff.
Saturday Night Fever.
Yeah, Saturday Night Fever in 77. So this came out a year before that in 76. And it's a baseball movie about a charismatic pitcher who's played by Billy Dee Williams. And this pitcher teams up with one of the best hitters in the Negro League, played by James Earl Jones. And they basically form their own team, and they go on the road to play exhibition games and like make their own money since they're being undervalued by the team owners. And Richard Pryor is in this too. And it's a really fun movie. To me, it kind of feels a little bit outside of Spielberg's usual wheelhouse. Like, I can't think of a Spielberg sports movie. I mean, I guess he's had like some sports scenes in a few of his films here and there, but I don't know, this would just been a very, very strange choice for him to make. Obviously no white director would ever be the first pick to make a movie like this in the modern context, but 1976 was very, very different. So I guess it could have conceivably made sense. And like, again, with the performances and stuff, you've got Billy Dee Williams, you've got James Earl Jones, you've got Richard Pryor. Like, these are great actors at the maybe not quite at their peak, but certainly like super charismatic and funny guys. And I think Spielberg is a guy who like likes to have fun, you know, when he's making his movies. He really, some directors, you get the sense that like they carry the weight of the world on their shoulders when they're making a movie, and it just kind of feels like this Herculean effort. And Spielberg, to me, has always felt like a guy who just kind of like floats in and really loves being on the set and like really gets energized by it and has that that energy that is contagious to everybody that he's working around, from all the stories that I've read anyway. So I guess he could have brought that and a little bit of that tone to The Bingo Long Traveling All-Stars and Motor Kings, which is just a weird movie, a weird title for that film. Okay, so next up, 1988's Rain Man, directed by Barry Levinson. It's been a long time since I've seen this. What do you think about this as a potential Spielberg movie, Chris?
You know, from what I understand, he worked on this a long time, and then he like handed, I read a quote from him recently, I was looking up something else, that he basically handed all the work he did over directly to Barry Levinson, who directed the film. So I do wonder how much Spielberg gathered material Barry Levinson used or whatever, but I could definitely see this as a Spielberg movie. It'd probably be a better movie just because Steven Spielberg is a better director than Barry Levinson. I don't think it's a controversial thing to say. he is. So at the same time, I have not seen Rain Man since I was a kid. I genuinely wonder how this movie holds up. If it's like, you know, It's a very tough thing to have an actor playing a developmentally disabled character, just because like that comes with baggage. That comes with the idea of like, you know, to reference Tropic Thunder, you risk going into that simple Jack territory where you're like mocking them in a way for clout, for, you know, award. And, you know, Dustin Hoffman, didn't he like win the Oscar for that? So like, you know, that's definitely like
the
risk you run, where it's like, you know, the movie landscape is littered with actors playing developmentally disabled characters in not the most sensitive way or the most I genuinely wonder how this movie holds up, because I haven't seen this since, you know, the days of VHS.
Yeah, it's been a long time for me too. Yeah, he did. Dustin Hoffman has won Best Actor twice, for Rain Man and for Kramer versus Kramer. So, I found a quote from Spielberg. He said, he's talking about Rain Man. When the film began winning Best Picture and Best Writer, I kept thinking, God, maybe I should have forgotten my entire friendship with George Lucas and said, George, go hire somebody else to do Indy 3. Of course I thought about that. And I'm like, so glad that that didn't happen, because I love Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. So for him to have picked this as the sliding doors option instead would have just been really heartbreaking and like a big L for me personally, because I love that movie so much. But he also said, practically speaking, if my name had been on Rain Man, shot for shot what Barry had done, I probably in my heart of hearts don't think I would have even been nominated as director on that film, and I'm not sure the film would have won that many awards. So that kind of shows like Spielberg having a little bit of a chip on his shoulder in terms of the Academy and like, you know, there was that famous video that people might not remember at this point of like, didn't he hire a camera crew when he was directing Jaws?
Yeah, there was like a camera crew there to film his reaction to watching the Oscar nominations. And he did not get nominated for director for Jaws, and he was notorious, not notorious, but like understandably heartbroken about that. You know, it's not wrong to say Steven Spielberg really wanted an Oscar. Like he, like from the get go, that was like, you know, Steven Spielberg is an industry guy. He is not a maverick outsider filmmaker. He's very much in the mainstream, and he really wanted an Oscar for years, you know, and he finally got it for Schindler's List. And that was seen as like, it's about time. He finally earned his Oscar. And so, you know, he really wanted that Oscar. So, you know, it makes sense for him to be like, God damn it. I missed out on winning.
Yeah. Okay. So next up, 1991's Cape Fear, directed by Martin Scorsese. And there was a story that had been going around for a long, long time about how Spielberg and Scorsese essentially swapped movies with Schindler's List and Cape Fear. And I guess Mike Ovitz, who ran the Creative Artists Agency, CAA, the big like super agency in Hollywood, he was the one who sort of circulated that story. I think it might have been in a book that he wrote, like a memoir or something. And that story like really took hold. And then I guess the Hollywood Reporter finally asked Scorsese and Spielberg about this like a couple years ago. And or maybe it was earlier this year, actually. I don't remember exactly when the THR piece went up. But I think they essentially like debunked that story. And they were like, no, we never actually made like a proper trade. It didn't really work out that way. So we wrote about that at Slash Film. I'll link to that in the show notes. It has all the actual details in there if anybody's curious about that. But yeah, that was like the story that I had heard for the longest time. And it kind of like internalized that as being the gospel truth. And apparently it's a little bit more complicated than that. But let's imagine a world, Chris, where Steven Spielberg would have directed Cape Fear. I know you love Scorsese as well. What do you make of the 91 version of Cape Fear? And what do you think a Spielberg version of that might have been like?
You know, when I watch Cape Fear, the Scorsese Cape Fear, it really feels like there are shots in that movie where Scorsese is almost like channeling the way Spielberg directs. It does not feel like a Scorsese. I mean, there are Scorsese touches in it, but it has this sort of like big sweeping style to it that, especially at the end where they're like the boat is on the water and there's a storm and there's like matte paintings and stuff like that. It feels Spielbergian. So I could, you know, I don't think it would be as violent of a movie if Spielberg had directed it. Cape Fear is a very brutal movie. It's actually shot like, if you watch it now, it's kind of shocking that this was like a mainstream sort of like, I mean, it was a hit. I seem to remember it being a hit. So it's a brutal movie. And I can't imagine Spielberg going to that place, especially at that point in his career. Like maybe now, like the Spielberg of today would probably get there, but not the Spielberg of 1991.
Okay, our next one is Shrek. This came out in 2001. Andrew Adamson and Vicky Jensen directed this. Spielberg bought the rights like a decade before the movie came out, potentially to produce but not direct. And IMDb actually lists him as an uncredited executive producer on the movie. I don't know if that's a real thing or what, but obviously
it was a DreamWorks picture, and he owned DreamWorks at the time. So
yeah, that's why I wanted to mention it here, because it may be like a little bit on the outside of what we're talking about. And I just thought it was interesting because like he eventually went on to direct an animated movie with The Adventures of Tintin. But that was like the performance capture thing, you know, that whole style. That was a much different process than the more traditional CG animation of Shrek. So I did want to mention this because A, it was such a massive movie, and B, like you said, it sort of helped put DreamWorks on the map in a big way. So we don't have to really get into that one. I just thought it was like an interesting footnote. All right, the next one here is Meet the Parents, which came out right around that same time, 2000. Jay Roach ended up directing this. Steven Spielberg was apparently interested in making this movie with Jim Carrey potentially playing the Ben Stiller role, which I had never heard before. What do you make of Meet the Parents? Obviously it's gone on to become, you know, it's spawned its own franchise and become its whole big thing. But what do you think about that first film, Chris?
You know, I saw Meet the Parents in theaters when it came out, and I've not seen it since. I've never felt like I got to rewatch Meet the Parent. I don't think I actually ever saw any of the sequels either. Cause like, you know, it is really, so
yeah, you got it.
Yeah, I don't think we need to, you know, little Fockers. Like, all right, I don't need to see this. Like, you know,
didn't really have an essential feel. I feel like Spielberg could have made this, though. Like, it's rare that he makes out-and-out comedies, you know? But I think if he was interested, especially right around the turn of the century, he was getting into some, well-documented in your own podcast, he was getting into some pretty dark stuff around 2000, 2001 or whatever. So the idea that he could have maybe squeaked this one in right before AI, for example, maybe in between AI and Saving Private Ryan, might have been a little bit of lightness. And he seems to do that. He will vacillate between some pretty heavy subject matter and sometimes some lighter, maybe fluffier, kind of more emotional stuff. So I could technically see this as a Spielberg movie, but all right, one more here before we take a break. And this one's slightly out of order. I apologize. The order of these is kind of all over the place today. But Twister, 1996's Twister, Jan de Bont directed this. Part of what sparked the idea for this episode, Chris, is when we were talking about Twister earlier this year, and the one thing that I wanted to say about the movie, but I held off saying until this episode, is that for me, the original Twister feels like the most Steven Spielberg movie that Steven Spielberg never made. It has that great sense of wonder, and it pushed the limits of what was possible technologically, and it had great characters and this wonderful sense of adventure, all these hallmarks of Spielberg's movies at the time. So when you think about that idea, Twister, as it existed in 96 as potentially a Spielberg film.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I love the Twister we got. I think it's pretty enjoyable. I don't want to say good because it's a really enjoyable movie. I do wonder if like a Spielberg version would be better, like just because he has such a unique take on how to film action. Like it would definitely, like, you know, Jan de Bont is a great action director, as evidenced by Speed, one of the best action movies ever made. But I do wonder how a Spielberg directed Twister would look. I imagine it would be a better movie, probably, honestly.
Yeah. Okay, let's take a break and then we'll come back and talk about the rest of these films. So the next one up is called Mozart and the Whale from 2005, directed by, I'm sure I'm going to butcher the pronunciation here, but I think I'll just say Peter Nace. I think he's from Scandinavia somewhere. And it is about two people in their 20s who are played by Josh Hartnett, and I think Rona Mitra is the other one, who meet each other and fall in love, but they have a hard time connecting because they both have Asperger's syndrome. It is a very, very Sundance-y movie. It is like peak Manic Pixie Dream Girl era. And I watched this to prepare for this podcast episode, and I would honestly only recommend people watch it if you are like a true Josh Hartnett completist. But maybe more than any other movie that we talked about so far, it would have been bonkers for Spielberg to make this, because he might not have made War of the Worlds or Munich if he opted to make this instead, because they all came out in the same year in 2005. So I don't think you've seen this one before, Chris. I think we were talking before about some of the ones that we missed. And understandably, I think you never saw Mozart and the Whale, right?
Yeah, I've never even heard of this.
Yeah, I just, it's so strange to think about Spielberg making like a movie that has all the hallmarks of a Sundance indie drama or whatever. It just does not really feel like, in 2005 especially, it just does not really feel like the type of filmmaker that he was at that period. It would have been so, not necessarily out of character, because it's not like the plot is something that he would never touch or anything, but just like filmically and like the step down, you know, he's making some of the biggest movies in Hollywood, and then he would have dropped down to making a movie that probably cost $2 million or something like that. I don't know what the exact budget of Mozart and the Whale was, but it was not a lot of money compared to what he was doing at that time. Okay, so The Mask of Zorro is another one that I guess this one came out in 98. And I did this big oral history piece. Spielberg came very close to making this. He seemingly spent a long time developing it. He was very interested. Martin Campbell ended up stepping in as the director on that. But Chris, you and I have talked about Mask of Zorro before. I think you love this movie. What do you think about a Spielberg version where he would have directed it?
Yeah, this feels to me is the most Spielberg-seeming movie on the list, more so than Twister. That said, it's hard because, you know, as much as I love me Steven Spielberg, I love The Mask of Zorro as it is. It's so good. It's so much fun. I don't doubt his version would be good because he's Steven Spielberg, but I don't know. I'm happy with what we got.
Yeah, that's where I fall as well. I just love the movie as it exists. And as much as like maybe some of the action stuff could have been like slightly improved, I think it's so good as it is that that I would much rather have seen him direct, I don't know, Saving Private Ryan, or even maybe what some people might consider something like a more of a miss, like Amistad, which came out in 97. So like conceivably he would have been working on that around the same time as he was developing this. But yeah, I think the cards shook out in the right order for this one. I did want to ask you about The Haunting, which came out in 1999. I think this is another Jan de Bont movie. I didn't write down the director for this. It's been a long time since I've seen this one. Yeah, but yeah, okay. So Spielberg and Stephen King began developing this together, inspired by the 1963 version of the movie. I had no idea that the two of them were working on it. They ended up parting ways after experiencing some creative differences. But like, those are 2 year guys, Chris. What's the deal here?
Yeah, I think I wrote about this on slashfilm.com. Steven Spielberg and Stephen King have talked about working together multiple times over the years. And this was one of the projects they were developing. Basically, Steven Spielberg just really wanted to make a really scary haunted house movie. And so he turned to Stephen King. And it just, for one reason or another, things didn't really work out. And it sort of like, they split off into two different projects. So Spielberg went on to produce this version of The Haunting, which is based on the Shirley Jackson novel, Haunting Hill House, which was, of course, also turned into that Netflix series, which is really good, even though the Netflix series is very, very loosely based on the book. And Stephen King sort of took the work he did on the project and turned it into Rose Red, which is a mini series, which is also about a team of paranormal investigators and looking into a big old haunted house.
Do you think that a Spielberg directed horror movie, let's say, I'm looking at his filmography right now, I guess you could say Jaws is a horror movie. You could also maybe stretch it a little bit and say Jurassic Park has some horror elements, but he's not really a horror guy. And like, he is obviously one of the most talented, just pure filmmakers that we have. So like, on a craft level, I am more than convinced that he could craft a perfect jump scare and like do all the necessary filmic things that are needed for a terrific horror movie. But conceptually and sort of emotionally and like personality based, what do you think he has what it takes, I guess, to be to go into sicko mode, for lack of a better term?
Yeah, I think he could do it. I wish he would like just make a straightforward horror movie, because he definitely understands how to elicit horror, how to create dread. You know, there's stuff in like littered throughout his filmography that hints, especially like War of the Worlds, I think is like a really good example of really like dread inducing stuff in that movie. There's like some nightmare stuff in that movie. And The Haunting as it exists now is terrible. Just a piece of shit movie. So I really wish he had made it, because it would be a lot better.
I just realized, of course, there's one more horror movie that Spielberg made that we haven't talked about yet, which is Ready Player One, the scariest movie of his entire filmography.
Horrifying.
Okay, so the next one on the list here is Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone and the Sorcerer's Stone, the first movie in the Harry Potter franchise. This came out in 2001. Chris Columbus ended up being the director here, but Spielberg developed this for 5 months. He says he turned down the movie to spend time with his family, although Page Six at the time quoted him as saying, "I purposefully didn't do the Harry Potter movie because for me, that was shooting ducks in a barrel. It's just a slam dunk. It's just like withdrawing $1 billion and putting it into your personal bank accounts. There's no challenge." So that was his quote. I'm not sure about the veracity of that quote. Page Six, kind of a famously sketchy website. Wikipedia says that Spielberg wanted to make this an animated movie with Haley Joel Osment doing the voice of Harry Potter, which I'd never heard before, but that certainly would have been an interesting sort of alternate take on what became this gigantic mega franchise. So have you even watched any of the Harry Potter, Chris? These movies don't really seem like they're up your alley, but were you just culturally curious enough to dip in on any of these?
Yeah, I've seen most of it. I've never watched I didn't watch the final two, because at that point I was like, okay, I don't really care anymore.
Yeah.
I've seen most of them. The only one that really stands out in my mind is the Alfonso Cuarón one, which I don't know, was that Prisoner of Azkaban?
Yeah, that's the third one. Yeah.
The one that I really distinctly remember. So that I don't have a particular feeling. I disliked Harry Potter before it was cool to do something.
I do think that Spielberg actually would have been a good director to tackle that, though. Like,
oh yeah,
I
mean,
he yeah, makes sense. It seems yeah. like yeah, it seems like with obviously he produced stuff like Goonies and like the you know Kids in Peril and all that kind of stuff. I think he's like one of the preeminent filmmakers who knows how to do that maybe better than anybody else. So yeah, I think it would have made a lot of sense. Okay, 2003, Big Fish, Tim Burton ended up directing this, but Spielberg was attached to direct for a while. He wanted Jack Nicholson to play the Albert Finney part. And he,
that would have been really cool. Wow.
Yeah, he asked John August, who wrote the screenplay, to rewrite the movie to give the Albert Finney character more to do so Nicholson could actually play that role. And apparently he later said that that was a mistake. Like, he made a mistake by asking him to sort of alter the DNA of the movie. And eventually he left to direct Catch Me If You Can instead, which I think everything actually worked out pretty perfectly there, because I really like Big Fish, and I think it's maybe my favorite of the Tim Burton movies, which is maybe a deranged thing to say given how many movies that he's made that people really, really love. But I am like all about Big Fish, and I think that's the last really great movie that Tim Burton has made. I know that that's like a point of contention among a lot of people too, but
no, I think that's accurate. Tim Burton has not made a good movie since Big Fish. I'm yeah. sorry.
Yeah. So this is another one though, where I feel like Spielberg would have been really great. It has that sort of father-son dynamic that's like incredibly emotional with the Billy Crudup character and the Albert Finney role. And there's just that sort of whimsical, like fantastical, almost like magical realism type of grand yarn spinning storytelling that I feel like is very much in Spielberg's wheelhouse. But what do you think? Do you agree that he would have been a good fit for this?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Steven Spielberg is the ultimate dad filmmaker, the guy who makes movies about bad dads. And this movie is very much about a guy who doesn't understand his dad. And that's so baked into Spielberg's DNA. But yeah, I keep saying this over and over again, but it would be such a different movie in his hands, because Big Fish as it is now definitely has that Tim Burton sensibility to it. Mm-hmm. And it would be such a different movie in Spielberg's hands. It would be like it would be more nostalgic, I guess. Like, Big Fish as it is now doesn't feel nostalgic to me. It feels more, like fantastical, like a storybook sort of thing.
Yeah.
I think Spielberg would probably lean more into the nostalgia elements of it.
Okay. 2005's Memoirs of a Geisha. Have you ever seen this?
I've never seen it. I know of it. I know it's controversial now. I remember it was like a big book when it came out, but it's very much like a white guy writing about Asian characters, I believe. Mm. And I feel like that sort of like has dampened it in the cultural perspective over the years.
Is that why it's controversial now?
I think so. I mean, like, I haven't read it. I just remember, reading over the year, and like, I don't even know the story, honestly. I just remember it has that controversy about it.
Yeah, this is one.
And
where...
also, I'm looking at the Wikipedia now, but it also, like, there were non-Japanese actresses in the film, even though the movie is set in Japan. So that's a point of contention. So it's something like that.
Yeah. So I feel bad saying this, Chris, because if this was directed by anybody else, I would have really made an effort to watch it before we recorded this episode. But honestly, life is too short for me to watch a 2-hour and 45-minute movie directed by Rob Marshall.
I know. Oh my
God. He is just one of my least favorite working filmmakers, and I just straight up don't have it in me. Like, I apologize to our listeners for not going above and beyond here, but I really just had to draw the line somewhere, and that's where I drew it. So we can't really comment much on this one, but yeah, suffice it to say, I think Spielberg would have made a better movie than Rob Marshall did. So I don't think that's too much of a hot take. The next one here, I'm really curious what you think about this, because this is another film that I've never seen. The Curious Case of Benjamin Button, which came out in 2008, and David Fincher ended up directing this. Spielberg was attached. I don't think there's any big story about why he ended up not making it or anything. But what do you think about this as like as both a Fincher movie and then potentially a Spielberg film?
The Curious Case of Benjamin Button is David Fincher's worst movie. So I think it would be a good movie in Spielberg's hands, because the reason it does not work, for me at least, on a technical standpoint, it's good. It's well directed. The visual effects are wonderful. The cinematography is great. This is a very sentimental movie, and David Fincher is probably the least sentimental mainstream filmmaker around. He just, mm-hmm. he does not do sentiment. He's he makes movies about deranged people, and that's not what this movie is. This movie is very much trying to be like a almost wholesome sort of film, and it just clashes with David Fincher as a filmmaker. He's a very cold and clinical guy, and I feel like if Steven Spielberg had made this, it would probably be a home run. As it is now, this is in my opinion, David Fincher's least good movie.
Worse than the Alien movie that he made?
Yeah, I like Alien 3. I think that feels like a David Fincher movie. This feels like David Fincher trying to make someone else's movie.
Ah, okay. Gotcha. Yeah, well, it's been on my list for a long time. I finally need to get around to seeing that. Next up, The Secret Life of Walter Mitty from 2013. Ben Stiller ended up making this. Spielberg, back in 2003, once again wanted to work with Jim Carrey on this, but he bailed to make War of the Worlds and Munich instead. Have you seen The Secret Life of Walter Mitty?
You know, I never saw it. I remember when this was coming out, I saw the trailer, and I thought the trailer looked really good. And then every review was like, this is a piece of shit. And I was like, you know what? I'll get around to seeing it. And I just never got around to seeing it.
I find myself pretty mixed on it. I remember kind of being a little bit allergic to it when it first came out. My wife loves this movie, and so I've come around to it more on subsequent viewings. Sean Penn plays a role in it that just feels a little... There's a little bit of dissonance with what I know of Sean Penn to be like as a human being versus the type of role that he's playing in this movie. And yeah, you said the word sentimental earlier. This is a very sentimental movie, and it's like... very hard on its sleeve, has very big emotions, and some of that works and some of it doesn't. So yeah, a little bit of a mixed bag for me, but I think Spielberg probably could have done something interesting with it. Although I do have to admit that I kind of like Ben Stiller as a director, as a filmmaker. So I think this was like an important movie for him to sort of get this, to take that intermediate step up that we were talking about. And then since then, he's gone on to make a bunch of TV stuff. Everybody always talks about Severance, but I think a lot of people have forgotten about Escape at Dannemora, that terrific Showtime series that he did that was set in a prison. He directed, I think, all of the episodes of that show, and it's fantastic. So I just wanted to give Ben Stiller a shout out as a director. And I think this is actually a pretty good representation of like that line that he can walk as a director. So I'd be curious to know what you thought about this, Chris, if you ever decide to actually check it out. So next up is Interstellar from 2014, Christopher Nolan. Spielberg was famously going to make this around 2007. I think this one fell apart because of business reasons. Like it was set up at Paramount, but then Spielberg moved DreamWorks from Paramount to Walt Disney in 2009, and the movie, I guess, stayed with Paramount, so they had to find a different director for it. And I think it was it Jonathan Nolan, Christopher Nolan's brother, who wrote the script for this? So, like, yeah, it was a weird thing, I guess, where it sort of came back around to Christopher, even though I guess it wasn't originally intended for Spielberg. But what do you think about Interstellar these days, Chris?
You know, I love Interstellar. I liked Interstellar when it came out. I feel like there's been a reappraisal of this, because I distinctly remember when this came out, a lot of people were disappointed with it for one reason or another. And I feel like in the years since, people have come around to it being like, it's good. In fact, I don't think it's the best Christopher Nolan movie. I think it has some problems. I don't think it sticks the landing. I think the ending is a little weird, where like Matthew McConaughey comes back and he finds his dying daughter, who's like an old woman now, played by Ellen Burstyn. And she's just like, go off and have your own life, dad. It's like, this is weird. This does not work at all. But beyond that, I think Interstellar is pretty damn good. It's got some really great moment. Like that whole docking sequence is incredible. With the score is just fantastic. Mm-hmm. It's one of my favorite movie scores of all time. It's
wow.
Really good. And, so yeah, I am pro Interstellar.
I was one of those people who's disappointed with it because I went like completely cold into the movie. I knew Nolan was making a new film and it had Matthew McConaughey in it, and that was about all I knew. So I didn't even see a teaser trailer for this one. I just like went in, I was like, blow me away. And then I walked out feeling a little disappointed. And I don't think I've seen the movie since. So I do need to rewatch it, because I have that same feeling that you do, where like culturally, the reputation of this movie has done nothing but grow in the past 10 years. So, and I honestly don't even remember the score, because I just saw it that one time. But I think a lot of people use anecdotally, I've heard a lot of people use the score from this on like TikTok videos and stuff like that. So it's been like a big, you know, there's a big resurgence of interstellar love out there. So what do you think about Spielberg directing this? I mean, I guess like has he done like full sci-fi, like space time travel stuff? He's done AI and Minority Report, but like anything even approaching the level of, I guess you could call it hard sci-fi as this?
I mean, yeah, like other than Minority Report and, you know, and War of the Worlds and of course Ready Player One, best movie. he hasn't really made a space movie, I guess. Like, I feel like I'm genuinely surprised like he has not done that, because that seems like the two things he has not made movies topics on are baseball and space. That feel like, why don't we have a Steven Spielberg baseball movie? I know we talked about the Bingo Long movie, but like, baseball is such like an American sport, and Steven Spielberg is such like an Americana filmmaker. It seems seems kind of weird that he's never made a baseball movie. Like, what's going on, Spielberg? You gonna make that baseball movie or what? He is making that new movie now that's like a UFO movie. So there's that. And he's got Close Encounters of the Third Kind, but that's very much and E.T., which are very much alien movies, but they're very much set on Earth. So yeah, he hasn't really gone to space. I do feel like, I don't know how much different it would be as a movie. I feel like I can't imagine him making the movie as it is now, because Interstellar, you know, spoiler alert, is very much about characters abandoning Earth, which feels something Spielberg would not do. It feels like he would be like, we have to, like, I feel like one of the things that did not sit well with a lot of people in Interstellar when it came out is that plot point where the movie is set up to make you think like, oh, we're going to try and find a way to save Earth. And midway through the movie, they reveal like, there is no way to save Earth. Everyone on Earth is going to die. We have to literally relocate people to new planets. And there's something like almost pessimistic about that in a way. Like, it's hopeful in the sense that like, yeah, we get people off of Earth and we save them. But the idea of like, we have to abandon Earth feels like something Spielberg would not do, at least in my mind. I don't know.
Yeah, it's interesting you bring that up, because at the end of Close Encounters, the what's his name, Richard Dreyfuss character leaves his family behind, and I think in years since, Spielberg has said like, "Oh, now that I'm a father, now that I have a family of my own, I would never have made the movie that way. I would never have let that go through as the choice in the movie." So, yeah, it is interesting thinking about it on that level. I think he would have nailed that scene with McConaughey, like watching the video monitor and breaking down and all that, like the separation of the family and that sort of emotional connection over long distances and stuff. I feel like Spielberg would have been all over that. But
when you get down to it, it is another kind of dad who abandons his family movie. And that is what Spielberg does. So yeah, that does make sense.
Yeah. Okay. A couple more here. Actually, I think we have maybe five more. So The Trial of Chicago 7, 2020, Aaron Sorkin originally wrote this for Spielberg back in 2007. The writer's strike and some budget concerns caused Spielberg to drop out. Sorkin obviously stepped in to direct. I think we've talked about this movie probably on the podcast, whereas like, I think you and I both agree that like, Sorkin is not a great director. He's a pretty excellent writer at times, most of the time, but yeah, kind of a whiff when it comes to moving the camera and just like doing all the things that a classical director would do. Do you think Spielberg would have been, he certainly would have been a better fit behind the camera than Sorkin, because Sorkin is not necessarily, like we said, the greatest director, but do you think that The Trial of the Chicago 7, as we saw it, feels like a Spielberg story, like something that he would have actually sparked to and been able to like breathe life into in a really interesting way?
Yeah, I do feel like it, because it feels very akin to The Post in that it's set in that same sort of time period. It's not dealing with the same sort of, it's dealing with the same sort of elements of like, you know, the government pushing back on people. And so I do feel like he could have done something with it. I would have loved to see that version. Like, when was the last time anyone was like, let's rewatch The Trial of the Chicago 7? Like, I don't think that's ever happened ever and never will. Like, I don't think anyone even remembers this movie exists. So I do feel like if Steven Spielberg had made it, we'd probably be rewatching it. But I do think he could have done something with it. I would like to see him work with Aaron Sorkin, because, you know, Aaron Sorkin gets a bad rap. And to be fair, Aaron Sorkin does some cringy shit. But I do think Aaron Sorkin is a really good writer of dialogue. He's an excellent dialogue writer. And I do wish Aaron Sorkin would work with better filmmakers again instead of directing his own stuff, because he is a shitty filmmaker. Aaron Sorkin needs a good director to mold his work. He needs like a David Fincher, or he needs a Steven Spielberg. And at some point he got in his head like, I'll just direct my own stuff. And someone needs to sit him down and tell him that's a bad idea.
Okay, so the next one is one that I've not seen, which is Spike Lee's remake of Old Boy, which came out in 2013. And Spielberg was attached to make this. I want to say he wanted Will Smith to star. Is that right? Do you remember that?
I don't remember that detail, no. But I mean,
okay, so I'll have to double check that. But you've seen this movie. So what do you think about it, especially compared to the original?
You know, this movie gets a bad rap. I don't think it's particularly great. It's definitely not as good as the original. The original is, you know, stands on its own. I do think it's kind of an interesting movie. I'll say that. It's not like boring. It's not like, you know, Spike Lee is a great filmmaker. Spike, you know, it's not like Spike Lee is some like journeyman. Like he's not who's the guy who directed The Crow? He's not Rupert Sanders. He's not like right. some guy just taking a paycheck gig. He's a, you know, a genuinely great filmmaker. So, it's got some stuff in it that's interesting. I don't think anyone would ever be like, it's as good as the original. That would be a folly to say, but, I don't think it's as bad as its reputation suggests.
I mean, having only seen the original movie, the type of shock value that comes, I'm trying to not spoil what happens in Old Boy, but the feeling that I got when the credits rolled on the original Old Boy is not a feeling I would ever in my life associate with something that Spielberg would provide to audiences. So what do you think about that? Like, do you think Spielberg has it in him to do something that is so like, anti-audience in a way?
No. Yeah, I do wonder how he would have handled that twist, because it seems anathema to everything Steven Spielberg does. Maybe he would do it. I don't know. But I can't imagine him being like, I'm going to keep that ending. He'd probably do something different.
Yeah, and this was 2008 when he was thinking about working on this. And yeah, Will Smith had expressed interest in starring. And that's so weird to think about too, because especially Will Smith in 2008, I mean, the same kind of mentality, right? Like audience first, very, blockbuster forward. Like this is the guy who ended up not making Django Unchained a few years later because he didn't think that that audiences, I guess, would buy him in that role, or that it would like look good for him to play that role. You know, he's very like image conscious in a way that all movie stars are, but maybe even more so than several others, because he has like so many such an unfair weight to carry on his shoulders as a movie star. Will Smith, I mean, Slap notwithstanding, let's talk about like pre-slap yeah. Will Smith. So yeah, it's just fascinating to think about these two guys are like maybe the two people in Hollywood who I would think would never deliver on the twist that happens at the end of the original Boy. So anyway, a fascinating what if there. Okay, so Exodus Gods and Kings 2014, Ridley Scott ended up making this, and Spielberg was one of many directors who was, I guess, briefly attached or considered or something like that. I tried to differentiate between movies where he was on a list or something versus movies where he actually was, there was an announcement made that he was going to make it, or he developed it or worked on it in some capacity. And so I think this technically falls into that latter category. I tried not to include stuff from the former category in this conversation, because that probably would have been a much, much longer list. But I think Exodus Gods and Kings is just a giant whiff all around. Like, talk about movies that nobody talks about anymore or really remembers even happening. This movie has a big controversy at the center of it, because Ridley Scott was very blunt about like, hey, I have to cast white people in this because white people, I'm paraphrasing his phrase, but, or his words, but he was basically like, I got to cast Christian Bale and Joel Edgerton and people like that in this movie because they're bankable. And like, I can't cast people who would have been, you know, Egyptian actors or whatever, more period appropriate actors or location geographically appropriate actors, because people, I wouldn't have been able to like make this movie for the budget that I made it at or whatever. So that's the only thing I really remember about Exodus Gods and Kings as a movie experience. I'm sure you've seen this movie. Do you remember anything from it? Is there like a sequence or even a shot that stands out in your mind all these years later?
You know, I will not defend this movie. I'm a Ridley Scott defender. his racist comments that you just mentioned, not understanding. I do think Ridley Scott is a good director. And I go to bat for a lot of his movies that people don't like, especially like recent stuff I will go to bat for. That said, this is not a good movie. I will say the only thing in this movie that I thought was interesting is, you know, this is the story of Moses and the Ten Commandments and Exodus and all that stuff. And the one thing this movie does that's interesting is, I feel like everyone knows the Moses story about how he talked to God and God told him to get the Ten Commandments and free the slaves from Egypt. That doesn't start. Moses in this film, played by Christian Bale, doesn't start getting his visions from God until after a scene where he like falls down a mountain and hits his head. So the movie is not so subtly implying that like maybe Moses was just like crazy and like he banged his head and he thought he was hearing God's voice, but he wasn't. And I was like,
wow,
that's actually a really ballsy idea to put in your, you know, Moses movie. And that's the only thing I could say for the movie that's interesting. Everything else is just like not good. There's a lot of like horse death in this movie, which really bothered me for some reason. I don't know. Like there's lots of scenes where horses get killed, and like it feels like almost like does Ridley Scott hate horses? I don't know. Like
especially considering what happens to that horse in Napoleon, where like Cannibal just like explodes.
Yeah, that's true. Like I wonder if Ridley Scott does not like horses. Ridley Scott, weigh in if you're listening. I know you are. You're listening maybe to the Slash Film podcast.
One threw him off his back in like the 70s or something. He's just had a grudge ever since.
Like, fuck horses. He does not like horses.
All right, three more movies here. American Sniper from 2014. Clint Eastwood directed this. I have not seen this movie yet, but Spielberg, quote, desired to have a more psychological conflict present in the screenplay so an enemy sniper character could serve as the insurgent sharpshooter who was trying to track down and kill the main character. I don't know. Warner Brothers would not meet Spielberg's budget requirements, so he just walked away from this one, and Eastwood ended up coming in and made a movie that made like a ton of money. I was going to say $1 billion. It didn't literally make $1 billion, but I think it was the highest grossing movie of 2014.
It was a huge hit.
Gigantic movie. So have you seen American Sniper, and what do you think about it as a potential Spielberg vehicle?
I have seen American Sniper. It's a conflicting movie because I don't want to get too much into this because I'm sure someone will want to murder me for saying so, but it's fair. I think it's fair to say that Chris Kyle, the real guy in Spy movie, is a controversial figure. And the movie, you know, Clint Eastwood I'm trying to phrase this in a way that will not get me in trouble because I don't want to upset anybody. But Clint Eastwood tries to have it both ways in this movie. And I do think the movie is pushing back against the story that Chris Kyle told in his book, which has been criticized for not being 100% accurate. The movie does try to push back against that a little bit and try to portray him as a flawed guy. It's not a bad movie. It's an interesting movie. Clint Eastwood is a good director. He's made some excellent movies. So a Spielberg version of this, I imagine, would be a lot more Hollywood-ish, which is makes me sound like I think of less of Steven Spielberg, which I really don't. He's one of my favorite filmmakers, but I do feel like this would be a lot more of a Hollywood version of this story, and Clint Eastwood's version is not really that, although it is. Goddamn, man, there's like no way to talk about this movie.
I get what you're saying. No, you're doing great. I was looking at Spielberg's filmography, and I don't really think he's kind of weighed in on like the war on terror, and that I guess is part of what this movie is about, right? Or sort of the aftermath of that anyway.
I mean, his War on Terror movie is War of the World. That's very much his 9/11.
Yes. Yeah. I should say directly.
A movie directly about that. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. That's a great point about War of the Worlds and very much like him reacting to 9/11. But so it would have been interesting to see him sort of wade into, I think of Spielberg more of this sort of iconoclastic director who is often making stuff that feels above the back and forth everyday political arguments that happen in this country. He has made political movies before. I mean, I guess technically every single act that you embark upon as a human being carries political weight.
He's a populist filmmaker. He wants to make movies for everyone. I think like the most controversial movie he's ever made is Munich, which is also coincidentally like one of his best movies, but that movie weighs into a very controversial topic and it takes a very nuanced stance on that. But other than that, he very much wants to make movies for everybody. He wants everybody to be entertained.
Yeah, I would say The Post is another one where there's a little bit of a blatant political thing. Lincoln, obviously, and then even like Minority Report is maybe a little bit more subtle about it, but
those movies can be very much seen as like populist entertainment. Like Minority Report, if you don't think too hard about it, is just like it's an action movie. And Lincoln, even though it's about this historical figure, it's a very funny movie. Lincoln is like one of his funniest movies, which is so weird to think about. Like his Abraham Lincoln movie is very funny, you know. So he very much tries to like make movies for everybody. He wants everybody to be entertained.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, same thing with Bridge of Spies too, now that I think about it. But yeah. All right, so we got two more movies here. The Little Things from 2021. John Lee Hancock eventually directed this. It was written specifically for Spielberg back in 1993. And apparently he passed because he thought the story was too dark. So John Lee Hancock came back around to it, whatever, decades later or decade plus later and ended up, or yeah, it was decades later and ended up making this thing. I tried to watch a little bit of this. It's streaming on Netflix right now. And I was just not into it after like, I don't know, 15 minutes or something. And I knew that you had seen it. So again, I like shirked my responsibilities as a podcaster by not finishing this, but I figured that you could help take us home here, Chris, and let me know what you would think about Spielberg directing The Little Things.
Yeah, again, it'd be a better movie. This is not a good movie. It is an interesting movie because it's very it's very anti-cop without I don't think John Lee Hancock realized how anti-cop the movie is, because the movie is very much about cops who are willing to do whatever it takes to get what they want. And I do wonder, like, I remember reading about how the movie the script was famously not updated. Like the movie is, even though it came out recently, it's still set in the 90s. And I feel like when it was written in a different era. Like the 90s are definitely a different era compared to now, how we look at police and how, you know, police forces are, I'm just like,
you're wading into all sorts of different territory.
Everything I say, everything I say here runs the risk of me getting in trouble. you know, cops.
We can move on from it. Yeah, exactly. Cops! Exclamation point. Yeah.
What do they do? I don't know. Nobody knows. Anyway.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, and it's interesting too, because like John Lee Hancock made a movie called The Highwaymen in 2019 that was like a movie about cops, basically. It was Kevin Costner and Woody Harrelson, like this sort of rah-rah Americana. I never actually saw that movie, but from what I remember about it, like that was the kind of vibe of the film. So for him to, decades before, have written something that is sort of anti that, it's just, a fascinating trajectory for him. All right, the last movie here is Maestro, which came out last year. Bradley Cooper ended up directing this. There was that great story that Bradley Cooper told about how he wanted to make this movie, and he screened a version of Star is Born for Steven Spielberg. And during one of the scenes, Spielberg got up and like walked over to Bradley Cooper and said, "You're directing this fucking movie," or something like that. And Cooper was just ecstatic about that because Spielberg saw that Bradley Cooper had the juice, as it were. So what do you think about a Spielberg directed version of Maestro?
I would prefer that, I think Bradley Cooper is a pretty good director. I really liked A Star is Born. I did not love this. This felt kind of not good to me.
I kind of agree with you, although I will say I think I would rather this movie exist in its current form as directed by Bradley Cooper, just because it's more interesting to me as a data point in the Bradley Cooper experiment than it would have been in the Spielberg experiment, if that makes sense. I'm just like,
I think that's fair to say, the window
of psychology that it provides into Bradley Cooper is just so fascinating and like reflective of what he thinks about celebrity and stardom and art and all this kind of stuff. And like Spielberg, either we know what he thinks already about those topics because we've seen those things explored in his work before, or frankly, it just wouldn't be as interesting because Spielberg isn't an actor and Bradley Cooper has that's he has such like look at me, I want to be loved energy that like the idea that Maestro is a pure Bradley Cooper vision is just like so much more compelling to me than it would have been as a Spielberg movie, even though I love Spielberg as a director. So that's where I fall, I think.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. I do think I feel, for lack of a better word, I feel like a Spielberg biopic at this point would be generic. Like, he doesn't need to make another biopic. Like, he's already made a biopic about himself at this point. Like, what else does he need to do? Like,
yeah, that's true.
Like, I'd rather see Spielberg try new stuff at this point in his career than just make another biopic.
Yeah. All right. Well, we did it, Chris. What do you think about this this experiment that we embarked on here?
Yeah, it's very interesting to like look at this list of films because they're all so different, I guess. You know, some of them feel like Spielberg movies like Twister and The Mask of Zorro, but a lot of them do not feel like Spielberg movies. And so it's very interesting that like that what he dabbles in throughout his career. And
I was just going to say he attaches himself to a lot of stuff as a director. I mean, these are 25 movies that like I tried to get as concrete examples as possible of things where he's either spoken on the record about his relationship to working on these movies or whatever. But I think there you could probably double this list with things that he was sort of flirting with as a director, you could say.
Yeah,
and that's a lot of work for one guy to be interested in and sort of like, you know, it seems like he's always like dabbling and sort of like testing the waters and like, what am I going to do? And then he just pulls the trigger and goes for it, you know? So yeah, it's just really interesting to take a step back and look at all the things that all the like, what if could have beens, and just think about all the things that interest him as a storyteller to the degree that he would attach himself as a potential filmmaker to these stories.
Yeah, he is a workaholic. I can't remember what book it was, but there was some book I read that like said like he basically spends his weekends like in his office just reading a bunch of scripts. Like he just gets scripts sent to him, and obviously I feel like everyone in Hollywood is like, send this to Steven Spielberg. Like I want Steven Spielberg. Like everyone wants him to work. So he just sits around reading scripts and he'll just pick out ones that really interest him, and then he goes to work on them. And some of them work out and some of them don't. And so it'd be very interesting to, you know, he shows no signs of slowing down. I hope Spielberg keeps making movies for the next 20 years somehow when he's like in his 100s, who knows, you know? So it'll be very interesting to see where he goes next. He's obviously a filmmaker who doesn't need to prove anything at this point. He can just do whatever he wants. And, you know, he's got that UFO movie he's working on right now with Emily Blunt and I think Colin Firth is in it. So that's probably going to be his next movie. But he was supposed to make that like Bullet sequel. Is that ever going to happen? I want to see that.
And Bradley Cooper is supposed to star in that, I think.
Yeah. It's like, give me, you know, I want to see what he does next. And it'll be very interesting to see how many of these projects ever end up working out. Like, wasn't he supposed to make like a DC movie at some point about some like pilot character that no one ever heard of?
Yeah, it was like a, not G.I. Joe, but it was something like that.
Blackhawk is what it was. Like,
yeah.
A character no one has ever heard of.
I mean, that clearly seems like something that he just like grew up reading comics in the 50s or whatever, and like has a childhood attachment to it. But really fascinating stuff. And now that you've said it, I'm hoping that we get a Steven Spielberg baseball movie before it's all said and done, because I think he would just really like tap into that.
Yeah, that makes sense. Like a Spielberg baseball movie in space. Right, you can knock off two things at once.
Yeah, absolutely.
The space baseball team. Space.
Somebody just. Oh my God, Chris, you're on a roll here. I, I don't want to stop recording because these ideas are just flowing now.
Hit me up, Spielberg. I'll write your Spaceball movie.
Incredible. All right. Well, that's going to do it for today's episode of the show. You can find a lot more about Steven Spielberg's actual filmography at slashfilm.com. And I will link to a couple things in the show notes as well, including that big Mask of Zorro oral history if you want to read all about his involvement with that movie. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really helps us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you all next week.